This episode is dedicated to Lieutenant David Formesa, who died from complications as the result of contracting COVID-19 in the line of duty. He proudly served the Perth Amboy Police Department for 18 years. He was not just a friend, he was family. David was selfless and always gave back to his community. Our thoughts and prayers are with his family and his brother, Ted. Please understand that COVID-19 has impacted all of us. Do your part to put an end to this pandemic and get vaccinated today. Go to cdc.gov for more information and guidance.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome to Siempre Palante. Palante.
Welcome, mi gente, to Siempre Palante, Always Forward, a podcast that is culture-driven, focused on familia, overcoming adversity, and legacy. I'm your host, Gerardo Luis Alvarez. Gracias for listening. In this episode, our guest takes card collecting to a whole new level. He believes numbers don't lie and will always tell you a story. The same numbers created a home for Project 2020 and Project 70 Topps baseball cards. His website and YouTube show are the industry-leading resources to help you find your favorite player and artist. Family and his connection to golf instilled a discipline that has carried over into the passion he has for collecting. Please welcome the founder of CRT Sports Cards, Chris Torres.
Siempre Palante, Always Forward welcomes Christopher Torres, CRT Sports Cards.
Hey, how's it going?
For the millions of listeners out there. Project 70, you're going to hear about a little bit later. You're going to be wondering, cards, Project 70, what's this all about? We're going to jump right into it. What is CRT Sports Cards?
Yeah, so CRT Sports Cards is basically me. So just for simplicity reasons, CRT are my initials. That's basically what stuck 3 or 4 years ago as far as my eBay handle. Originally, I was a case breaker for myself. So I would buy 4, 5, 6, 7 cases of a product, and then I would sell all the products. I would make money that way. And that was sort of what CRT Sports Cards was born out of. It was basically an eBay store, which is still out there, but I don't really sell much anymore. I got pretty good at that. I would start at, you know, a couple of cases. Then I got up to 12, 15 cases. So I built it up slowly. And then COVID happened and then everything changed. And so when COVID happened, I was laid off from my brand new career of 12 weeks. And I kind of realized that the world changed immediately. The moment that I was being paid to stay home and not work, I was like, this is not normal. Something is going to change, or the world we knew doesn't exist anymore. And I said, I wanted to document my time being furloughed. It is not about me having a million subscribers, or I didn't really have a goal. My only goal was to be able to look back in 30 and 40 years to how I handled this time period and what I look like, what I sounded like, because my parents can't go back 30 years ago and hear what they sounded like or look like other than just in photos. And so I launched my furloughed podcast, and that was only going to run for about 7 weeks. I'm like, I'll do it for 7 weeks and then I'll just see what happens. And then I was furloughed again and then again, ended up being furloughed for over 4 months. But in that time period, I started talking about Project 2020. And I had a show that maybe had 100 views in a week to having 1,000 views a day. And I was doing shows every single day. And now CRT Sports Cards is basically known as your home or your number one resource for everything around now Project 70 this year, but last year was all around Project 2020.
So can you explain a little bit to the listener, what is case breaking?
Yeah, so if you think about it in the easiest form, people go to a hobby shop and buy one box of cards, you know, it's $100. Then they either collect the cards or they sell them. And so case breaking is simply buying an entire case, whether that could be 12 boxes of a product or some cases are 10, just depending on whatever product it is. And then I treat it as a business. It's $600 for a case and every card is going to cost me 20 cents. And my goal always then was to return at least 25%. If I couldn't make 25% ROI, I would not buy into that product. And so I started with just one or two cases. It was always with cash. I never did it with credit because I always said, if I open a case and it's really terrible, it's not going to affect my day-to-day life. So it has to be cash because this is strictly a hobby. But over the many years of doing it, I did it solidly for about 3 years. I was able to take it from a couple of cases up to 10 to 12 to where I was now spending $6,000 to $8,000 to $10,000 on a single release. opening the product, it was a ton of work. I kind of don't miss all of the opening, all of the listing, all of the shipping aspects of it, but that's what case breaking is. Now, case breaking in the hobby is more about you going into a group or a channel or a website, and you are buying into someone's case. They're charging you for spots, and you may or may not get a card, but case breaking in my mind is still the original individual buying a bunch of cases, opening it, and then being your digital hobby shop because you have all the cards from the newest product.
How many cases to date?
To date, I don't know that number, but I know in 2018, it was over 80 cases that I broke in 1 year.
Wow. 80 cases, roughly how many cards?
I'm doing heavy flagship products like Series 1, Series 2, to where you're talking about 1,000 cards in the case, maybe a little bit less. I try to stay away from high variance product like a Topps Inception, for example, where it's like one pack per box, 7 cards. That's just too high variance for me at basically the same price point of like a Series 1 or Series 2. So we're talking cases of thousands of cards, and you're multiplying it by 10 cases, you're talking 10, 12,000 cards. I have to open, sort, list, sell, ship, a lot of hard work, but it was fun. To me, it was never about what I found, because I'm not really a modern card collector. And a lot of people are surprised by that because I'm so involved with Project 70 and Project 2020. But for me, a lot of times it was when I shipped that card to a collector that I knew that person was going to keep that card forever or a long time, or they really were looking for it. So I got more pride in shipping out cards than I really ever did opening them, because I knew they were going to the right place.
You got to love what you do. There's no way around it, because I'm looking at the numbers, 25% return on investment. You probably have made quite a bit on some good pulls there that you were like, whoa, okay, this pretty much covered the whole case.
Yeah, there is. So like one card really started me off in this whole journey, but I'll fast forward and I'll go back to that card in a second. In 2019, I think it was Topps Heritage High number, I'm pretty sure, it could have been Heritage, whatever Pete Alonso's rookie card was, I hit the red auto, which is the exclusive autos you want to get in Heritage, and then the black chrome version. I hit both of those, and both of those cards paid for my case above and beyond, more than I could ever expect. I've never flipped a case that quickly within like 24 hours and had all of the cards left over and all of them, and basically all my money plus a lot more. To go back 6 years, maybe, when I was getting back into the hobby after moving to Seattle, I picked up a box of 2015 Topps Signature Series. At the time, there was just one brand. Now there's a retired version and an active player. This is a one card per box product. It was like $50. And I pulled an Andrés Galarraga. Now, for a lot of collectors, they're not going to know who that is. But back in 2015, 2016, Andrés Galarraga had some just insane super collectors out of Florida that were just trying to outbid each other. And I sold this card for $2,000, and I just had bought it for $50. And I didn't even really understand the market for Andrés Galarraga. So from $50 to $2,000 is kind of where this whole journey started from. So I kind of got very lucky at the very beginning, but that was really one of the first bubbles we saw was Andrés Galarraga, because the super collectors were paying thousands of dollars for these cards. And then Topps, unfortunately, milked it. They walked away.
And that's the big cat. For all you baseball fans out there, Google Andrés Galarraga. What are some other players that really stood out that you were like blown away, but it meant more to you because it was a player that you enjoyed watching growing up?
I really like Gary Sheffield because growing up in West Texas, the Diablos were the Brewers' AA farm club team. So I kind of grew up following Brewer players and Sheffield and like John Jaha and Teddy Higuera, players like that, that a lot of people don't really know about these days, but that I grew up with. But the whole point was to sell the cards I opened.
I know there's a favorite player. Everybody has that one player.
Yeah, there's two here. Growing up in the 90s, the Braves were always on TV. They were the first team really on national TV every single night. And so Chipper Jones for me was the guy. Like I say every Chipper Jones card, I didn't have every Chipper Jones card, but I had thousands of Chipper Jones cards. He was the guy that I chased forever. And then when I moved to Seattle, I kind of fallen out of love with the Braves. I'd sort of becoming a Mariners fan, but I've always been more of a Mariners fan. I'm not really a player fan. And I always say this on the show when Griffey comes out, I don't really have a connection to Griffey. He was gone before I moved here. I remember him as a kid, but as a Mariner fan, I don't have any connection. Now, in saying that, though, my favorite player now on the Mariners, or at least in the history of the Mariners, is Ichiro. And that is because I was lucky enough to be in Tokyo at the opening day series when he retired. I never really saw Ichiro play. I don't recall as a Mariner before then. Obviously, he came back at the end of his career. But to be able to experience the country of Japan and Tokyo, give that athlete, that man, that person a send-off like that, it was just awe-inspiring. And so for me, that's a moment that I'll never forget. And to be there and to see that fandom. So Ichiro right now is my favorite player, but it's just because of what happened on his last day of his baseball game career.
One of the really cool things is what you're doing with Project 2020. You mentioned that a little earlier. And in Project 70, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Project 2020, for anyone who is unaware of what Project 2020 is or was basically in 2020, is Topps commissioned 20 artists to recreate 20 of the most iconic rookie cards out there in the Topps library. And so the artists had pretty much their own leeway to do what they wanted. Of course, apparently some cards were not allowed to be produced. They had to go within certain guidelines and they had to be approved by Topps. And so those were released two per day, starting, I think, around March of 2020. And that went all the way through the end of the year. Towards the end of the year, they released three per day, but these were just art cards. And at first, nobody was even paying attention to it. And some of the earliest cards had some of the lowest print runs. And I didn't really get into the set till around card 60. Now, this set is 400 cards. Topps always said, it's not going to happen next year. There's not going to be a Project 2020. Well, they were correct, but they also now created Project 70. So Project 70 in 2021, the numbering is weird. They're celebrating, of course, Topps' 70th anniversary, but they picked 51 artists, which doesn't really make a lot of sense. And they're each creating 20 cards. So we have now this monstrosity of a set. It's 1,020 cards. Right now, they're being released at four per day. They started at three per day. The biggest difference is this year is the artists can pick their players. They can do whatever they want, and they can pick any year, any team. Apparently, like Joe DiMaggio, they can't put him in. Pete Rose, they can't put him in. So there's certain player constraints. But for the most part, you are getting the players that the artist wanted to create, where last year is the artist signed up to do Ricky Henderson, to do Don Mattingly, to do Jackie Robinson. Now the artists have their free reign, do what they want. But also apparently each artist is supposed to be creating two packs from the year. So there's supposed to be an 18 player set plus two packs, like pack designs. I don't know if that's ever going to come to fruition because we get to see one. We're now at card almost 400. So maybe they'll be at the end. Those could be some really low print runs because who knows if they're not going to sell very well. But I figured if they're going to do the pack designs, they would mix them in periodically, but we're almost 50% of the way there and they're not there. But at the end of the day, it's just another art set. It's all about art. It's a mixture of the shoe world, tattoo artists like JK5, regular artists, all making these Topps baseball cards under the name now Project 70. The ones that I've enjoyed the most from Project 2020 and now to Project 70, you have Natural. Gregory Siff is an artist who is one of my favorite ones from both sets. You got F Dot. You know, Blake Jameson is not an artist that I collect personally, but I really respect everything that he's done for the community. And then like on this year's set, like I love Cess. I love Ron English, who I didn't really know much about. And a lot of these artists I'd never even heard of until this set. And a lot of them are quite famous. Gregory Siff is a very, very famous artist out there that I'd never heard of because I just wasn't involved in the art world. But yeah, I mean, there's so many that they're all great. But for me, it comes down to like Natural, Gregory Siff, F Dot, this year, Cess, Ron English. I love JK5's work. I do prefer JK5 in Project 2020, where it's more black and white than color, but you can't have everything you want all the time. New York Nico is one that I really like because him and I have talked a little bit, which has been great to get to know him a little bit better. Him and Naomi, who were designing the cards. I'm not a New York person. I've been in New York for, I think, a total of 3 days in my life for a quick wedding. But I'm in love with his set. I think it's fantastic. And he's only doing New York players. And there's no reason that I should be collecting this set. I have zero connection to, but I think his cards work so very well together. That's an artist that I didn't know about until now.
I mean, I like the way that folks are giving their perspective on how they feel it should look or how they feel when they're doing this art. And that's what I love the most about it. What are some other things that you have in there
for the hobbyist. You got a little bit of everything.
On the website, so we go back kind of what I used to do before Project 2020 and 70 is I used to release, it was monthly, now it's yearly, but there's a sales tracking file. So if you just want to become better at selling sports cards and tracking your sales and understanding how you're doing, on the website, there is a 2021 sales tracking file you can download for free and use it to track your sales. It helped me become a better seller back in the day. It gets downloaded multiple times a day by people using it. But for the website, the majority of the website is around Project 2020 and Project 70. So it's number one, image-based, from just showing you the players that are in the set, showing you the year. So of course, the main focus right now is Project 70. So you can go to the website, you can see the newest releases for this week. You can see the top 10 printed cards. You can see the bottom 10, but then you can search by artist, by team, by player, by year, because the artist can use any year from 1952 to 2021. So the ranges of years are numerous here. And then also, if you want to look back at Project 2020, it's also on there. You can see the same thing. You can see the artists and the players. There's not as many galleries in 2020 because it was a very streamlined, structured set. Project 70 is all over the map at times. So there are more galleries. And then there's also stats on there. You can see the entire checklist. You can see what artists have released, what players, and what players are out there in years. And so there are some stats mixed in along with the galleries.
There's a clear passion for collecting, for the sport in itself. I give you a lot of props, man, for it, because it's pretty cool. As even someone that doesn't collect has to admire that.
I mean, having the artist reach out to me and say, hey, I love the website because I'm able to easily reference what players have been released, what style they're using, your artists. So that's really cool for me, because for like when I did the Project 2020 part, it was more about just being an evergreen site for the future, because I thought this set could be quite historic. And I just wanted to have a website to where anyone in the future, in 5 years, can go back and view all the cards, because the Topps website for an archive perspective is not the best. It's very clunky. And so that was the whole goal, was just to have sort of a museum of these cards. And now it's continuing, of course, with Project 70.
And now a word from our host, Hiraldo Luis. Did you know, sabías que? One of the most pressing public health concerns is mental illness, a condition that affects hundreds of millions of people globally. In fact, according to the World Health Organization, one in four people will experience a mental health condition at some point in their lives. That means four in four people are significantly and profoundly impacted directly or indirectly. With such serious ramifications for societies at large, it's essential that we address the mental health needs of every individual in order for each society to survive and eventually thrive. In a crisis, you are never alone. Help is always available. For immediate support 24/7, reach out to the Crisis Text Line by texting COALITION to 741-741 or call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. It's free and it's highly confidential, unless it's essential to contact emergency services to keep you or your friends safe. In an emergency, if you or your friend need urgent assistance, call 911 immediately or take your friend directly to the emergency room. If you feel it's safe, stay with your friend or find someone to stay with them until help arrives. For more information, go to the mentalhealthcoalition.good.works. Ya tú sabes, now back to the show.
What's interesting is this has inspired folks to do their thing. I've been inspired by the Negro League Baseball art that they did for Josh Gibson, 75 artists.
Yeah, I asked him, I was curious. I said, I think I'm missing the boat on this because there's something happening out there. I keep seeing it every day, but I don't know much about it. And they said, yeah, it was supposed to be like 15 cards, just a small thing. And it grew to like 70 or 75 artists out there. And it's a really big deal now. Of course, the Josh Gibson thing is huge, but yeah, it's a massive set in and of itself for just Josh Gibson.
What's the most prized card you have right now?
I think it's the one you can see in the background right there, but that's the print. But it's the Natural Jackie Robinson, and it's Jackie Robinson. I mean, you can't ever underestimate and understate what he did for the game and what he went through as an individual. I've always been very drawn to the Jackie Robinson story, but that Natural card, and for anyone who doesn't know, if you haven't watched my show, my favorite number is 3. And somehow this card, of course, I missed it when it first came out, but this is card number 3 in Project 2020. The red background is just unbelievable. And when I started collecting my T206 card, the thing I really collect outside of this is I first started going after red background cards. So you have this red background Project 2020 card of Jackie Robinson. I could sell every Project 2020 card I can sell every Project 70 card, but that card is the one that I hunted and I wanted for many, many months. And I finally ended up buying it last summer. I spent like $400 on it. I think it might be cheaper now, but that was a card that I just always wanted. And then the community, of course, gave me that signed framed artist print right there at the end of Project 2020. And so that's a special piece. But for me, it has to be that Jackie by Naturale.
I want to shift a little bit into how you got here with your passion of collecting sports. Where did this start? Let's take it back a little bit in your family. And who were some of your inspirations in your family that led you here?
An inspiration perspective, it goes way back to when I was a kid. And I grew up playing golf. At 3 years old, I was on the golf course. I played through high school. I played Division I college golf. I wasn't too good Division I college golf. I did play 3 years at Texas El Paso. So I wasn't starting all the time, but I did play 8 to 10 tournaments in college. But at the time, my inspiration was always players. And it's a sport you grind it out. You just have to hit range balls. You just have to practice. And I was always a small guy growing up, and I'm only 5'8", so I'm not exactly like I'm tall right now, but I was always interested in like Corey Pavin and Ian Woosnam, guys who were really short, but were able to make a career out of it and hang with people who were obviously in the athletic world, who were bigger and stronger. They had to really think about how to do the same thing, but from a distinct disadvantage side. So I was always just a grinder. I just grinded and grinded and grinded and playing golf. And then I stepped away from the hobby for many years. But when I was playing golf, I was tracking every single stat. Every fairway I hit, every green I hit, every bunker. I mean, I tracked stats that no one even really needed to track back then, but that was just numbers always made sense to me. Numbers tracking, because numbers don't lie. Numbers will tell you the story. And so it's always been in the back of my mind of just tracking and doing that kind of stuff. And that's where the sales thing came from. And then just tracking of Project 2020. That was the original goal, was the website. The website was just to track everything, just to give people a reference point, because that's just what I do naturally, running an Excel file, building formulas, showing what's the best card or the worst card. That's just fun for me. It just comes natural. It's nothing extraneous. But it's all about, for me, just been the grind. So as individuals who really were up against it, but were doing the correct things at the right time, basically.
Who in your family inspired you to do some of these things? Was it someone outside your family, a college professor or a teacher? Who inspired you?
My dad, as a kid, he was an operations manager, but he would always have these old school DOS printed out sheets at home, 20 feet across back in the 80s, and pouring through numbers for his warehouse, where stuff is, looking through stuff at night. And so he was always very, very busy with work. My mom was a school teacher. So the good thing with that is that during the summertime, she was always around with us. My dad was always working just because he worked a normal job. Everyone works throughout the year. But it was a mixture of the two. They always just supported me in what I wanted to do. It was never about them forcing their perspective on me. They let me play golf, but they knew that if I didn't want to play anymore, I could stop. If I wanted to go do something else, they would support me. So for me, I'm here today because of the support. And they never, ever said, you have to do this. I want you to be a doctor because that makes me look better. It's you go do what makes you happy. And at the end of the day, this is where we are now.
The support, which is amazing, has blossomed into this amazing passion you have for the sport of baseball. What are some of the things you do to pay it forward, to help out society and to help inspire a positive narrative? What are some of the things you do to help folks out?
When you think about positivity, when it comes to Project 70 and Project 2020, I get critiqued a lot by not being critical, by not being negative on a card. I just don't find that helpful. There are so many things going on in the world right now that are negative, that are downtrending. I want this to be a positive thing. I want this to be a positive review of the cards. Maybe I don't understand a card. Maybe I don't understand what an artist is doing. I just find no joy in going onto a show and just ripping something apart. And so I really want to celebrate these artists. They're doing very, very hard work. I can't imagine designing 20 cards every couple of weeks and then being judged on that by a 70-hour window. We put all of our eggs in a basket around the print run, or what did this card sell in 70 hours? And so for me, it's just about shedding positive light on the artists, along with them connecting with my community. You know, I have a Discord community, we're on Facebook, Twitter. I just enjoy talking to people who share the same passion around Project 70. I do at times also do giveaways on the shows. I'll give away cards. I was doing it pretty regularly at the beginning. The shipping got a little bit funky with those, so I pulled back a little bit on the giveaways. But for the most part, I just like engaging with everyone and showcasing the positiveness of the cards that come out, because it's so different than modern baseball cards, which for me are kind of boring because it's the same card, just with a different border and a different sparkle variation. But these art cards are very different.
Any wishes you would want for Topps? What would you like to see on Project 70?
I still believe that the process of getting the card from the artist to the website, to printed, to ship to the customer is a very, very difficult process that no one gives Topps credit for. I would love for Topps to do a 5-minute, 8-minute video from conception to an artist to the final product. These are hand-produced cards and they're put in mag cases, the thicker ones. It's not to where they can just print them on a line and put them in a pack and send them out. This is a very labor-intense process. And I think people would like to see the behind the scenes of Project 70, because the shipping in Project 2020 was just a nightmare because the set was so successful. It felt like 6 months to get a card, and now we're getting cards within a few weeks. And so I think they have done a lot of great things on the back end. I wish they would celebrate that a little bit and show the end buyer how that process works.
Amen. And I'll plug in here real quick to add on to that. You're right. The behind the scenes, everybody likes to see, because we're starting to see that now with the artists getting the behind the scenes, these little trailers and videos, these short videos. I want to see more representation of more female artists, more artists of color. They're out there. We need more of that. And also more of the Negro Leagues baseball players, some of these players that are forgotten, that thanks to the likes of Mr. Bob Kendrick keeping the stories alive, seeing more of those, because we've seen those have been very successful, the far and few that have been plugged. So definitely seeing more of that. And I'm waiting for a Martin the Eagle card. I hope by the time, you know, this episode comes out, it's out, but it's a shame if it hasn't. Shout to his son, Gilberto the Eagle.
Gracias, Chris, for sharing the origins of CRT sports cards and the love you have for baseball card collecting. For all my listeners, kindly rate and review the show. 5 stars and a little love go a long way. Check the show description for more info on where you can find Chris via social media. The next episode will be dropping in 2 weeks. This gives the Siempre Palante team time to bring you more inspiring stories, culture-driven, focused on familia, overcoming adversity, and legacy. In the meantime, be on the lookout for special live events and bonus content on all my social media platforms. Nos vemos pronto. Pa'lante.